Hey friends, I'm Stacey, and I love chatting about teen books. What makes this podcast a little different is that I want to encourage your curiosity beyond the book. So how will I do that? Each month, I'll feature one book and discuss its highlights. You know, the things that made me love it. I'll also share the things that didn't knock my socks off. Then I'll explore what the book taught me and how it inspired a curiosity of information well after the story finished. But I won't be exploring these books on my own. Each month will feature various guests, co-hosts, adding their thoughts to the conversation. Now, let's get on with our episode. Listeners, thank you for joining me for another episode, or if this is your first time, thank you for tuning in and giving the podcast a chance. For those that don't know, the podcast is recorded at the Goffstown Public Library in Goffstown, New Hampshire, and it's during business hours. So you may hear a phone ring, some background talking, maybe the ding of the elevator. It just adds to the overall uniqueness of the podcast. And folks, I am so excited to welcome back Liz.
Hi, everybody. I'm so excited to be back. I know I'm definitely not just a placeholder until Stacey can get some real teens here, but I'm happy to fill the gap.
Yay. Well, thank you, Liz, for your guest appearance on this episode. And I'm really looking forward to chatting about our hits and misses because we usually have some pretty good disagreements. And actually, already today, we were talking about the book and we were, you know, back and forth. Like, yeah, we already started our disagreements during the workout.
That's what makes it interesting. See, disagreeing already.
Exactly. That's true. Yes. Okay, so we are discussing Kingdom of the Wicked by Kerry Maniscalco. And so before I get into the summary of this book, I just have to say that my favorite YA series is from Kerry, and it's the Stalking Jack the Ripper series. And I just love those books, especially the final book, which is Capturing the Devil. And so I'm so excited to have another series by her. So let me set the stage for you for Kingdom of the Wicked. Twin sisters, Victoria and Emily. Don't mind my, I can't speak today.
So Amelia.
Amelia, I know. I don't know what I wanted to say. Twin sisters, Victoria and Amelia, are Strege, witches who live secretly among the humans. They work in their family's well-known Sicilian restaurant, along with their parents, and their Nona, that's their grandmother. The two girls have amulets that Nona often makes sure that they're wearing, and Nona also frequently reminds them to keep watch out for the Malvagi or Malvagi?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, we'll call them the Malvagi.
I think there's going to be quite a bit of mispronounced Italian in this podcast, so yes. I apologize ahead of time.
Now, I actually wanted to go in and like listen to how to pronounce things, but with a snow day yesterday, I'm a little behind on a whole lot of things. So please bear with us as we say some of these words. But anyway, that is otherwise known as the Wicked. They're demon princes that will take your soul. So Nona speaks of legends and stories about the first witch, La Strega Prima, and the curse that she placed on the Wicked. She also teaches Victoria and Amelia, I don't know why I'm having trouble with her name because I said it all this afternoon, the magical ways of hiding their craft from humans and midnight creatures. However, one night, Victoria misses her dinner service at the restaurant, and the worst has happened. Amelia finds the body of her beloved twin. Victoria's heart has been ripped out of her. Amelia sets out to find out who did this to her twin, the reasons why, and to seek vengeance. Oh, she's dabbling in some dark magic, which has long been forbidden. Amelia summons one of the wicked princes, Wrath. Wrath explains that he too is trying to solve Victoria's murder, as well as a series of other similar witch murders. Maybe they can work together. But Amelia has long been warned about the wicked. Should she trust this demon? And if she does, what will it cost her? Okay, I set the story up with a lot of mispronunciation. So sorry in there. All right, so let's do hits and misses.
Hits. Okay. So my first hit was that this book had a lot of really cool and sort of unusual mythology that it was based on. I feel like in YA and in just general pop culture things, you know, we come across a lot of Greek mythology, like in lore. We read lore a few months ago. Roman mythology, Norse mythology, you're probably familiar with a little bit, or at least you're familiar with Chris Hemsworth. even, you know, like sort of like British mythology when you have like, oh, fairies and the fae and the Seelie court and all that. Those are things that I feel like I see all the time in young adult books. Yeah. But this book definitely drew on some like established mythology, but ones that got deeper into things than I had heard before. And it was very cool because it was deeply rooted in sort of like Italy and Sicily. And it was, I won't get too into the specifics of it. We'll dive into that a little bit later. But it was pulling from just cool legends about the wicked. And it gets into like the sort of occult references to them throughout history. And that was really interesting to me.
It's funny that you mentioned lore, because as I was reading this, not that like I think they're similar at all, but you know, in lore, they had like the different houses, so to speak. It was interesting in here because I kept kind of thinking that when they were talking about, so we'll get into this a little bit, but there are different houses for the wicked. And so I can definitely see
how you could like how there would be similarities between those two things, because it was kind of a lot of, you know, like a somewhat mystical character being like, okay, here's the deal, here's what happens, choose your allegiance. So it was similar in vibe, but there were some aspects that I hadn't really come across before that I thought were interesting.
Very cool. Do you have more hits?
I do have more hits. I thought our main character, Amelia, was pretty cool, and I thought she was a little bit unusual for a protagonist in like a YA novel like this, that's sort of like a fantastical one. And I think that's because, so when we're introduced to Amelia, her twin sister, Vittoria, is alive. And sort of Vittoria is the cool one. She's going out and doing stuff and being mysterious. And the more we learn about her, even after her murder, we see all the kind of cool and interesting stuff that she's been doing. Whereas Amelia kind of likes sitting at home. She's really invested in, like, the restaurant. She thinks a lot about cooking. And is able to identify the smells of herbs very easily, which it turns out to be like a handy thing. But just I liked that she had like other interests and other stuff going on in her life, and that this was sort of like a total like misdirection for her, this sort of incredibly epic adventure that she goes out on.
Yeah, and I think she kept saying she was like drawing on her sister, like her sister's kind of
like channeling her sister's spirit a little bit.
Because I would say that Vittoria is more, she takes chances. She's a little bit, or she's a risk taker, where Amelia is a realist, you know, kind of thinks of herself maybe, you know, more, not grounded so much, but like that, you know, she's not going to go out and do what she's not supposed to.
Right. She's pretty happy. She's happy with the way that things are, and she likes her life, and she's not, you know, looking to break the rules to do something different. But her sister is.
Yeah. So my hit is I thought the setting was fabulous. Historical Italy. And so I'm going to say that we never really give the exact era, but Liz has let me know that I missed something in the story and I'm a little wrong. But
I did inform Stacey. that there is one and only one reference in the very beginning of the book to, they use the phrase, the Kingdom of Italy. And the Kingdom of Italy was sort of a construct, a nation that only existed by that name between the years 1861 and 1946. So we sort of have like a window. But I do agree that aside from that one very singular reference that I was only looking out for because someone else told me that the setting was very vague in this book. Aside from that, it is kind of hard to place exactly when it's happening.
Right. Yeah.
We hear a lot about like Italy and Sicily, and they're in the city of Palermo. But the time period remains somewhat vague.
A little vague. But I think it is the perfect backdrop for witches and demons, religion and the supernatural, because that is mixed in here. We'll talk a little bit about that. But there's catacombs and dark alleys, cobblestone paths, abandoned palaces, and a monastery. So this is like an A-plus setting for an eerie atmosphere. It just made it for me. And equally, I also thought it worked when it was heightening the romantic tension between some characters. So it was superb in my book.
I totally agree. I mean, there's just like a lot of ruins and a lot of castles and like, ooh, meet me on the roof of this ruined castle. Okay. And I will say, I had a similar reaction and it had me going to the internet to look everything up as I came across it, because all the locations that the author mentions are real ones that I could find and look at pictures of. And there are a whole bunch of them, and I won't get into all of them, but by far, to me, the most interesting one, although potentially the most upsetting, so I might not recommend a Google image search of this one, but you mentioned the catacombs, and the catacombs, get ready for some mispronounced Italians, the Catacomba dei Cappuccini, the Capuchin catacombs.
Okay.
we're going to stick with that. Those are the real historical catacombs that were created by the monks at the Capuchin Monastery in 1599. Oh. And have been home to many, many bodies. And over the years, they sort of have like a rotating system. Oh, man. I read way too much about it.
A rotating system.
Yes, they do. For you have to pay for your place there. Anyway, don't worry. They're not taking new bodies at this time. They currently have 1,252 mummies. And these catacombs, they're open to the public. So if you are ever in Palermo, you can go and visit the Capuchin catacombs.
Wow.
And you can view these. Some of them are incredibly well, disturbingly well-preserved mummies.
That's crazy.
It really is.
Oh, well, so I didn't look at any of that, but now I wish I had, and so I think I will afterwards. But I
get ready for some bad dreams.
Okay. In daylight. I will do it in daylight. The other thing that I loved Wrath and Amelia. So in the Jack the Ripper series, the Stalking Jack the Ripper I talked about, I love the banter between Audrey Rose and Thomas Cresswell. Like, just in there. Yeah. But anyway, Maniscalco has done it again with Wrath and Amelia. Honestly, how could an author make me fall in love with a Prince of Darkness? I don't know. These two characters together I thought were pretty spicy, and I really liked it.
Oh, I would say there's quite a bit of spice.
Just
like as an undertone.
Yeah.
I am really interested to see how their relationship, I guess we can, I mean, it is a relationship. Yes. Anyway, I'm very curious to see how things progress between the two of them.
Yeah. So this is a series. This is the first book in the series. And so I think there's three books altogether, and all three are out, I believe. I already have the second book. I'm going to start it tonight because I just have to. So it is a series. So we'll have to see how we'll have to see what goes on with these wicked and these witches. I don't know. And another hit for me was one particular scene. And I have to be kind of vague about this because I don't want to give away any information. And I also don't want to ruin the scene for anybody else. But there's one particular scene that caught me by surprise. It was a sinister kind of surprise. I was not anticipating it all. And that made it really extra special for me. That's all I can say.
I know exactly what scene you're talking about. And I will say the... It's like a scene you thought things were safe, and maybe you thought people were safe.
Yeah.
But I will say the bad guy in that scene was very cool.
Yes.
And disturbing.
There's a lot of disturbing supernatural creatures in this.
Yes, indeed.
In this story. Definitely. So with those hits though, I do have some misses. And my first one is the middle got a little slow. Now, I was still invested, and quite frankly, you know, it's a slow build, and that really doesn't bother me. But I think that it could bother some people. I mean, they might lose interest in the book.
Yeah, I felt the same way. That would probably be my biggest miss as well. Mm-hmm. There were points in the book where I felt that we were going in circles a little bit, that there was a bit of repetition, and like parts where I felt that I could have maybe skipped a chapter or two and still, you know, been able to figure out exactly what was going on. Mm-hmm. So I didn't love that. However, I will say there was enough interesting and unusual things happening that I definitely persevered and kept going, because I truly did want to know exactly how, you know, this was going to end.
Yeah, and what was going on. So let's see. I know I have another miss, I believe. But maybe I don't. I guess maybe I don't.
Well, I think you had mentioned that maybe you felt the ending, even though it was the end of part one, was not as
that was
fulfilling as you might have liked.
That was correct. I did feel that. Now, okay, so, right, because it is a series. And so I understand that you're not going to wrap everything up with mm-hmm. it being a series. But I got to the end and I only had 10 pages left. I was like, not enough is being answered for me here. And then all of a sudden I just got to the last page and I was like, what? And I got up from my, because I finished it at work. I got up from my desk and I literally walked over to Liz's desk and I just looked at her like, really? That's it. That is why I had to get the next book right away, because there were not, I don't know. I felt like you could have given me a couple more nuggets to some information.
So maybe. This is the point where I have to admit that I was running really tight on this book and didn't finish it until far later than you might expect. And so I, Stacey got to the end before I did.
Amazing.
And I was trying to read the end pretty quickly. So there were times when I was like, wait, what, what? Wait, what's happening? Wait, what? Because I think, I don't know, maybe it's just because I was trying to read it too fast. But Stacey, did you feel that you had to read that a bit carefully?
Yes.
Yeah, because there were sort of some twists and turns.
Right.
And I think there was also a part where it was helpful that I had knowledge that was not in the book that helped me understand maybe who was being referenced. And I was still like, wait, what?
Yeah, I think when you get to that part, you do have to read it a little bit slower and really take in what's happening and maybe even go back and read it again. Because, right, I do think there's a – if you read it too fast, you could put it away and be like, wait a second.
But
who just
I
did
thought
what?
As much as I Who's love a self-contained book, I thought that that was – I mean, it's quite a cliffhanger.
It is quite a cliffhanger.
It's a great – ending, but it's a great ending that's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. And so I was completely happy that I could get it on Cloud Library, which is an e-resource, because we actually don't own this series in our library here. So I was like, oh no, I can't wait 3 to 5 days for it to come here on the van. So I was like, oh, do they have it in Cloud Library? Oh, thank goodness they do. Borrow. So yeah. So I guess maybe this ending did what it was supposed to, right? Because I'm immediately going to the next book.
Yeah, I felt that we got some things resolved. We definitely got secrets revealed. Mm-hmm. And then it definitely shoves you right into the next book. You're going to want to keep going.
Yeah. And I'm glad that I waited a while to actually pick up this series, because if I was waiting for the second book to come out, I might get a little mad.
Oh, boy.
A little irate. When is book 2 coming? So, yeah. We went off on a little tangent there. But so any other misses for you, Liz, do you think?
I don't know that I would call it a full miss. I did.
Are we gonna talk about the clothing?
I mean, a little bit. But so this was just a bugaboo of mine. It was So Stacey is not the only person in my life who's trying to get me to read this book. Mm-hmm. I have a very good friend who we recommend books to each other all the time. She also recommended this author to me. And her question about this book was she couldn't get over the fact that she couldn't tell during what time period mm-hmm. it was set. Yeah. And I have a little bit of an answer, but that's still not a full answer.
Right.
And I would have liked some more information about the time period. And one of the ways that I found this to be frustrating is, so there was, in my opinion, an oddly large amount of description of clothing by multiple characters. And
I like to be fashionable, but fashionable, obviously not for the time
fashionable
period.
In what time period that, so I found that I got too hung up on that. I would not recommend getting hung up on that. I would recommend just blowing past that and enjoying the book. But I did, she kept describing the sleeves that she was wearing and every day it was like a new dress, but none of those dresses made sense to me in the context of the time period. And also I'm sitting there going this could be 1861. Who owns this many dresses? This is very confusing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I wouldn't say that that's a real miss. That was just a thing that my own dumb brain couldn't skip over.
And yet I had no problem skipping over that. Nothing about that bothered me at all. Whatever.
I need to visualize.
I was bothered more that she had some dresses that didn't have secret pockets, so she could not put her special chalk inside, so that she couldn't put her circles around herself to keep herself safe from demons. That's what I was upset about. Like, why do you not have the secret pockets in that dress? But, okay.
An excellent point.
I digress. So we have curiosities beyond the book, and especially I think with this book, like lots of things we wanted to kind of go down and look at. So how about you first, Liz? What were your curiosities?
Well, I've already touched on a few of them in terms of like the real locations that are referenced in this book and some of the mythology. Yeah. But I would say that my greatest curiosity was in the depiction of hell. Yes, that's right, everyone. The wicked, the seven princes, they are the seven princes of hell.
That's right.
And so I'm sorry for that. But so this is the aforementioned super interesting mythology. And this is where it gets a little spooky and sort of into the occult. Mm-hmm. So the book, as we mentioned, it centers around the wicked, the seven princes of hell. And so sort of the origin of these princes, what this book is pulling on, it comes from writings in the Middle Ages on the classification of demons. Now, these writings, they're hard to cite, right? Because we don't have good information on who wrote them and exactly when they were written, if they were really written by the people that the thing says that they were written. So it's what we have, the text from these writings. And they also, they reference a lot of things from the Bible to back up the points that they're making, or other works that are assumed to be contemporary of the Bible, so from the same time. So it's kind of a real game of telephone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where a source citing a source citing a source citing a source, none of which we have any like real background on. But the ideas that this book is pulling on are, for example, referenced in a writing like it's called The Lantern of Light, which was written by in the early 1400s. And this is the book, the writing that we have, which claims that that these princes of hell are associated with the seven deadly sins.
Okay.
Hence, our boy Wrath,
right,
who is sort of like the main male lead in this book, is the demon prince personification of the deadly sin of wrath. And so there are demon princes personifying all of the deadly sins, and pride rules over all of them.
Yeah.
And that is an important thing to know if you're reading this book. I felt like that cleared up a few things, knowing that pride was in charge.
Yes. And so actually when I was reading this, I was a little confused about that. So I ended up going over to Liz and I was like, I was like kind of confused about this. And then
and I was like, haha, I already Googled it.
Yes. She informed me, well, this was something I was curious about. So, that enlightened me a little bit.
Because you see, all of these demon princes also have real names. I'm using air quotes for real names, that are referenced in The Lantern of Light. And pride, for example, is known as Lucifer.
There we go.
With whom you might be familiar.
Yes.
Now, I'd tell you some of the other names, but that might get a little bit spoilery.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that the characters in the book, at least, are not supposed to know the, quote, real name, unquote, of these demon princes of hell. We only see them referenced as, like, lust and envy and greed and wrath.
Yeah, and I don't think we're supposed to, at least in book one. I'm wondering if that's going to – I think that's going to come out in the other books.
Real name seems to be a thing that's going to come back.
Yeah, because I know that Amelia actually asks Wrath, like – she says something about, like, let me call you by your real name. And he's like, yeah, so we're not talking real names yet. No.
So if you are really interested in reading Kingdom of the Wicked, but you want to avoid spoilers, then I might recommend not looking this up yet.
But if you don't care – then you could look it up.
If I've made you curious, go ahead.
There you go. I think that's really interesting that after you told me that, I was like, oh. And it did make a little bit more sense to me, some of the stuff. So,
but what was really hard is I wanted to have like firm factual information about like this person wrote this book about the demon princes of hell. And it was very difficult to find like established sources instead of just like, here's like a wiki page that's just like about general mythology.
Yeah. That's interesting. So for me, I was really, really interested in the amulets and the different types of talisman that they had to kind of ward off the evil spirits. And so particularly in this book, they're mentioned the cornicello, or that, and that's the amulet that is given to Vittoria, and also an amulet that is worn by Emilia. And then there's also later on, they talk about another one called, I think it's the Cimarruta. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right or not, but those are the two charms that I found really interesting. So let's talk about the cornicello first, which is the amulet that we hear about most in this book. That's talked about a lot. It's an Italian horn. It's also called a cornu or the devil's horn. It's a talisman or amulet that's worn mainly to protect against. Now, listen, if you know anyone from Italy, the evil eye, right? We all know about the curses that could be like, I'm going to put the evil eye on you. Historically, it is linked to the Celtic and Druid beliefs and to worship of the moon goddess in ancient Italy. Ironically, the horn is often worn with a cross to give it extra power, and it's used for protection or safeguarding of the wearer and to keep the curse that is brought on by envy at bay. Interesting,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that's a very specific and interesting tidbit at the end of that. I did not know that.
There we go. So keep that in mind as you're reading the book. And then later on, we're introduced to this other kind of talisman, the Cimarruta. And this is an ancient symbol, and the meanings that they carry throughout Italy, they might have some different things that are on them, but it is basically an old good luck charm. It's rooted in the lore of the ancient pagan religions of Italy. It's worn around the neck or hung above an infant's bed to ward off evil. And many, like many of the lasting ancient symbols and beliefs, it is designed eventually, or its design eventually took on certain symbols of Catholicism. And so that is something actually you'll notice in this book, that there's kind of this crossover with Catholicism and the witches in hiding in a way. Cause I think even,
yeah.
Emilia says that like her mom actually even had like a rosary that she was holding on to.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get to something else later on when I like talk about another source. So this is an article that was written by, Jerry Finzi, that I'm reading here, who talks a little bit about the Cimarruta. And so traditionally it's fashioned after the leafy sprig of rue. And so that is talked about in the book too, the rue branches. It's an herb that is highly featured in Italian magic and lore. And the branch of the rue is divided into three stems symbolizing three forms of the goddess Diana. And that was a sacred herb. Actually, the rue was a sacred herb of Diana. So the various charms that appear on the rue design each have its own meaning. The main symbols are the moon, serpent, and key. And so I don't want to go like too much into this, but during this part in here where this good luck charm arises, the moon, serpent, and key are part of magic incantations that are said by some of by two particular witches, Emilia and somebody else. Then also there might be a rose, a hand holding either a wand or a sword. Sometimes there's a flaming heart or a fish or a dolphin and an owl. An owl was also one of the other ones that was used in this book. A medieval helmet, a blossom, a cherub, a rooster, and an eagle. So they kind of have some different things that can be on them, and they're a little bit different. But all of them always have a key, a serpent, and a moon. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
It is interesting. It makes me think of tarot cards.
Yeah, actually. A little bit. And so here was another fun thing. I was just looking up. I'm going to call this out. Liz didn't say it as a miss, but she was a little bit like, why are they talking about food so much in this book?
Oh, yeah. That is true. I did do that.
So there is a restaurant, right? They own a restaurant, but she's still a little bit like, why is Emilia always talking about food and what's going on with the food?
It's not that she was always talking about food. I appreciated that she had other interests. It was that like something really like important or scary or frightening was happening. And then she'd be like, I wonder how I can make this taste better. And I'm like, girl, you have other problems.
So
it's like, you know, when you watch like a teen drama and there's like a serial killer after them and they know this, but they're like, oh, what am I going to wear to prom? It's kind of the same sort of vibe. Yeah, sorry.
I hear you.
I've gotten off.
I hear you. Right. Yeah. Maybe it's not as important. You're right. Like, who cares about the food? I found this article, and sadly, I only have the page that does not have where exactly I found it. I will put it in the description, though. So if other people want to find this article later on that I got about Lori Bruno, she's a hereditary high priestess and elder of the Sicilian Strega line at the Craft of the Wise.
Oh, so that's cool.
Isn't that cool? So she lives in America, but her family comes from this line of witches of Strega from Italy. So she talks about a far less familiar tradition is Italian witchcraft. It's known as Stregeria. In Sicily, being a Strega or a Stregone is hereditary. One is born into a family of witches and taught the art from birth. And the thing about the book, too, is that there's only, what, 13 families, I think?
Yes, 13 families in Sicily.
In Sicily, in this book that we're reading, The Kingdom of the Wicked, that are hiding among the other humans. And so I thought that was really interesting. What I loved was later on, she talks a little bit about the religious energy in Italy was like an accelerant to the Strega traditions, and families often raise their children publicly as Catholics while privately teaching them the old beliefs and magical practices. And I think that was pretty evident. I think in this book, you know,
yeah,
Amelia goes and helps out at the monastery by cooking for them. And so I thought that was kind of interesting.
Her childhood friend becomes a fratello, a monk.
Yep, exactly. The Sicilian Strega were very strong. We had rolling pins, which were long sticks, and we'd roll our pasta. That was our wand. And I loved that. Like, I'm like, oh, see, I think it like was all part of the something there. I don't know. That made me laugh. The practice of the Stregeria was hidden in plain sight. The pentacle was used. The pentacle that they used was made on the loaves of bread that we ate. So right there, we would eat it. The inquisitor would come in and hear, have some bread. We gave him some, and like right in front of them were the tools that they used for their witchcraft, but it was hidden among their cooking and other implements. So I don't know.
Items.
Yeah, their kitchen items. So I don't know if that was like maybe a hidden meaning within the book too.
Oh maybe. Yeah. I could, you know. I can totally see that.
I just thought that was really kind of interesting.
And if you're anything like me, this is also reminding you of, the picture books about Strega Nonna,
yes,
by Tommy DiPaolo, which are very much, I mean, not a similar vibe, but drawing on similar traditions. And every time I see the word Strega, that's all I think about.
So sadly, it's funny that you say that because whenever I read about the grandmother, about Nonna in the book,
you
that
thought
was
about
the
Strega Nonna. Yeah, same.
Like, oh my gosh, Stacey, think like get a different vision in your head, but that was what it was. That's what I kept like thinking of. It was kind of funny. So I don't know. I Liz and I both have Italian heritage in us, so I think that this book kind of was interesting to us in that area. Your family's
definitely
actually from this area,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I have my grandpa was from Palermo, and my grandma was born in Brooklyn, but her family came mm-hmm. from Palermo. So I think that was also part of the reason why I was like looking at all of the places that were mentioned and like thinking so hard about the clothes and being like, well, those don't sound like things that I've seen in family pictures.
Yeah.
Because my grandparents could have been contemporaries of Amelia.
They could have. Now we'll have to find out if there's any Strega heritage in your family there, Liz.
Like, probably
not. You'll have to come back and let us know. Start checking out some old things, old books maybe. That you have in your house.
The only old books that I can think of were when we cleaned out my grandpa's basement and found mildewed copies of Poldark, like the entire set of Poldark, mildewed, but holding up his tool chest.
Yeah, probably not.
So yeah, if there's any magic powers that reside in mildewed paperbacks from the 70s, my grandpa's definitely got that.
Okay, maybe hidden in there. There's what were they calling them? The different books and the different sheets that had the spells and stuff on them.
The grimoire.
Grimoire, yes.
Okay. Unless it's crosswords or like Ron Cherno biographies, uh-huh. That's all my family's got.
So my family's from like a northern Italy. So Abruzzo is where my my great grandfather comes from. So I don't know anything about. I mean, we've talked about the evil eye a lot in my family, but that's about it.
There you go.
So anyway, I'm loving this book. I mean, I have some, you know, I'm still loving it. I'm starting book two tonight. I can't wait to see what goes on. It is pretty spicy. Like, I think it's just going to get spicier. The relationships are a little spicier. And if you have read Stalking Jack the Ripper in that series, then you know that Maniscalco is a pretty spicy writer anyway. just putting that out there for some people. I don't know. Anything else you want to share about this book before we let our listeners know what might be coming up next month?
I think that's about all I've got, except now I would really like to go visit Palermo.
I know. Yeah. Actually, reading all of this, there was like a lot that I kept thinking like, oh, so awesome to, I would want to visit, see this, see that.
And I was just like looking at a map of the city and it's just like castle here, castle here, castle here, catacombs here, castle here.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I will have to look all that up. So, oh, Scopa. I did have one more thing. I forgot. The game of Scopa. Have you ever played that?
No.
No.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. So in the book, at one point, Rath and Amelia are in an abandoned castle. And as they're working on whether or not they're going to, well, more Amelia is going to trust him to help her find out what's going on. There's this relaxing time of playing a card game called Scopa. And when I saw that, I was so excited because we play this game in my family. And so I was like super, super excited. So Scopa means to broom or sweep. And basically it is a pretty much a really well-known game and widely played in a traditional, it's a traditional Italian card game. Players take turns to play a card from their hand. To capture cards that are on the table. So you either play as just two people against each other or you play in teams. And there's like four cards across the table. And so on your turn, you can either lay down a card or you can take up a card as long as you have a matching card of the same value. And that's ultimately what you want to do. You're playing a, like three rounds, I think. And so you want to be the one at the end to have the most cards, the most points. And so you're trying to pick up those cards that are in the center.
So it's like opposite Uno.
Yes. Opposite Uno in a way. Yeah. So points are scored for taking the most cards in total and for taking the most cards in the different suits. So there's like a coin suit. There's a cups suit. There's a swords suit. And then there's also a, what's the other one? Clubs. There's a club suit. So you get different points for those as well. Like, and then like there's, the seven of coins. I think like that one is more worth more than something else as well. So there's a, it really is not hard, but there's quite a bit of strategy that has to go with it on whether or not you're going to pick certain things up or if you're going to wait. There's some luck too, but there is like, there is quite a bit of strategy in there. And that was that's something I think I loved. One, that I was so excited that they were talking about a card game I play and that my family plays and that we love. But the other thing is I think Rath was kind of, I thought it was an endearing moment between him and Amelia because I think he was teaching her to hone in on her talents and her own inner strength and listening to what her instincts are telling her. So I thought that was interesting because I think he was giving her a little bit of a, I don't know.
He was sort of sneakily teaching her or encouraging her.
Encouraging her. And yes, sneakily teaching her and encouraging her. He's, now, at the end, I don't know what this means because when I got to the last page, I was like, hey, buddy, I don't know.
I have my opinions and I'm curious to see what will happen. I have my suspicions. I think he's going to eat and enjoy more cannoli.
Yeah. Yes. Apparently, demons don't need to eat. But once he tasted
cannoli,
that wonderful Italian food, he very much liked it, especially the cannoli. Loved the cannoli. So, anyway, I was super excited about Scopa. I was like, oh my gosh, I just know this game. And that just like made me so excited. So I had to share that. So That is it today. So another episode is done of the Curious Reader podcast. Thank you for listening. And a special thank you to Liz for taking the time to join us again. And if you're a teen in the Goffstown community and you are interested in chatting about books around the microphone, come see me at the Goffstown Public Library. So Reva will be joining me again next month in that episode, and we'll be discussing a book that she is super excited about to share. She actually picked it. It is titled Short, written by Holly Goldberg Sloan. It's a heartwarming book full of humor and tenderness. It celebrates differences and self-discovery. Listeners, if you get a chance to pick up the book, read it, and then catch the podcast next month to join in the discussion. So finally, remember, if you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
So please click that heart or give us a thumbs up to share the love of reading and discovering something new.
And remember, the curious reader seeks understanding beyond the book.